Namaskar.
Bienvenue.
I'm from Bangalore, India.
Dublin, Ireland.
Turkey.
The Philippines.
This is Feet in Tours.
I came here to study.
To work. To volunteer.
Build a life of my own.
Welcome to Feet in Two Worlds.
Esto es Con los Pies en Dos Mundos.
Bir ayağım burada, bir ayağım orada yaşıyorum.
Welcome to Feet in Two Worlds.
Taking a critical look at the immigrant detention system.
In 1996, President Clinton signed an immigration law into effect that made it virtually impossible for immigration judges to actually consider the human being that's before them.
I'm John Rudolph, executive producer of Feet in Two Worlds, a project of the Center for New York City Affairs at the New School. Of all the people in the United States held behind bars, the fastest growing segment of the incarcerated population is immigrants. Some 400,000 immigrants are detained every year. The immigrant detention system is a key element of the Obama administration's policy that's resulted in the deportation of record numbers of immigrants, those who are undocumented, as well as many who are in the country legally. Recently, Feet in Two Worlds held a forum at the New School in New York focused on immigrant detentions. The first speaker was journalist Maria Hinojosa. She recently produced a documentary called Lost in Detention for the public TV series Frontline. She began by talking about the lack of due process for immigrants who are detained.
We were leaving the house yesterday. I live in West Harlem. And my daughter and I saw a man being arrested. Front of our house. I don't know if he was African American, if he was an African immigrant. There are lots of African immigrants. I assumed he was an African immigrant. He had his car had been parked. I just thought, you know, they're arresting him because he's driving without a license. He didn't just, you know, run somebody down. This is not a traffic stop. And I said to my kids, I said, I don't know what's going to happen with him, but he may end up being now put on a process of deportation. And my kids are like, oh, Mom, not again, because, of course, they hear this all the time, so I have to kind of moderate. And I was like, here's what you need to know, my daughter or my son. Now, whenever you are detained for any reason, this question is going to be asked to you. Where were you born? Where were you born? What difference does it make? This is the kind of basic stuff that, again, is transforming our society that we're all living, that we don't even know about, these basic issues of due process. When that happens, it isn't just affecting those immigrant families, which it is. It is ripping them apart in the most horrific way. But other things are happening. So once you answer that you were born in a different country in the moment when you're arrested because of secure communities, which is the other part of the policy. I mean, the problem is that, you know, how can you sum up in 10 minutes, which I'm supposed to speak to you for, you know, a policy that is incredibly complex, second only to the tax system. It's not funny. I know. But the problem is like, we all know, like, our greatest fear is getting that letter from the IRS, right? And worse, that the IRS has made a mistake. Mistakes are made. Okay. And we're talking about human lives.
Immigrants are held in county jails, in detention facilities run by U.S. Immigration and Customs Enforcement, the agency known as ICE, and in privately run facilities under contract with the Department of Homeland Security. One of the places Maria Hinojosa visited for her Frontline documentary was the Willacy Detention Center in Raymondville, Texas. She said federal officials allowed her to tour the facility under strict conditions.
In all of the other detention centers, I was speaking to as many people as I could. Every single person who was in detention that I could, I was speaking to. One of the first questions I was asking them was, at any point in your process of detention, were you asked if you had an American citizen child or family member? Except for one person, everyone said no, they had never even been asked that question. So that's a problem. By the time we got to Willacy, the Department of Homeland Security sat us down into a room. Willacy is a huge detention facility that's privately run. That's basically housed in tents, like circus tents. So not really supposed to be for more than 1 or 2 days or 3 days of detention, and people are being housed there for months. And by the time we got to Willacy, our last visit, they basically told, they sat us down and they just said, you can't speak to anyone. You are not allowed to speak to anyone. And if you do, this tour will be ended immediately and you'll be escorted off the premises. Freedom of the press. That's what it looked like. I pushed back. I said, well, you've got to give us someone to speak to. So they chose two people. They chose two people for us to speak to at the very end. We had literally 5 minutes with them. These are the people who they had pre-screened and okayed for us to speak to. One of them was a woman from Guatemala, first-time crosser with 3 children, who got caught crossing the border and had been held for 10 days. And I asked her, has anyone explained to you why you are being held? What the process is? What is going on? When you might be released? Has anyone? No. Have you been fed enough? No. Have you been able to go outdoors? No. And the second one was a man from Mexico who had been there 3 days, and the same, all no questions, all no answers to those questions. The title is appropriate. There are people, human beings, who are in fact lost in detention. They are invisible, and because they were not born in this country, they do not have access to a lawyer. And the residual impacts of what that's doing to all of us, yes, is unseen. And in a very sad way, it's unseen. Because it is, they are American stories.
Another speaker at the forum was journalist Valeria Fernandez. She's based in Phoenix and has been covering immigration issues in Arizona for several years. Valeria said that often a simple traffic stop leads to a person being detained.
Somebody's brother or sister or mother was stopped on the way to work, on the way to the grocery store, for some minor violation. Maybe they didn't put the turn signal. And police officer asked them for documentation. Where are your papers? They don't have them. And that's how they end up in the county jail. Now, a number of the county jails across the country, not just in Arizona, have programs such as Secure Community and 287G that allow them to basically identify people that are here without documents and place a hold on them to turn them over eventually to immigration authorities. And that's how they end up in the detention system. There's another way that Immigration and Customs Enforcement actually actively goes looking for them through these fugitive teams. And these are people that have maybe an immigration judge decided they needed to be removed from the country, and there was a deportation order that they ignore or that they didn't receive because they moved. And there's also, of course, well, there's a variety. It's pretty broad. But one of the most common ways in which I'm seeing this in Arizona is through these traffic stops, and is through the increased network of local police that are cooperating with the federal government with all these programs. And sometimes outside the scope of these programs, and the way that we've seen with Sheriff Joe Arpaio, who is doing raids in different immigrant communities. It's sometimes it's mind-blowing because people end up there literally because they don't have a driver's license. And sometimes they present a driver's license from their country or an ID from Mexico or Guatemala, and the police doesn't believe that that's a legit document. And then they arrest them, bring them in jail, and book them for fraud or possession of a fraudulent document. And that, at the end of the day, is never proved because the person doesn't want to stay in the jail. They want to be released to the immigration authorities as fast as possible so they, you know, can get back with their family and get it over with. So they really never get their day in court to have a due process and actually say, listen, I'm innocent, and the reason why you stopped me or the charges that you brought against me, they're really not legit.
As the number of detainees has increased, so have the allegations of abuse in detention facilities. There are numerous complaints of sexual and physical abuse, inhumane treatment, and racial profiling. Jackie Vimo is the director of advocacy for the New York Immigration Coalition. She said that reports of abuse are widespread across the system.
ACLU of Texas did a Freedom of Information request, found that there were nearly 200 allegations of sexual abuse of immigrant detainees since 2007 alone. So that's not that many years. They actually then filed a class action suit on behalf of three women who had been sexually assaulted while in the custody of ICE. And this is really the worst part of the story, not that there's anything worse than being sexually assaulted, but these were women that were coming as asylum seekers because of histories of sexual abuse and trauma in their home countries. So to come fleeing sexual abuse and then to be put in immigration detention center to be raped is, you know, really, I mean, this is what the system is doing. What might be shocking to many of you is actually legally, detainees are not covered under the Prison Rape Elimination Act of 2003. They are not covered.
Immigrants held in detention have the right to appear before an immigration judge. But according to attorney Amy Gottlieb, 80% of the immigrants who see a judge are not represented by a lawyer. Gottlieb directs the American Friends Service Committee Immigrant Rights Program in Newark, New Jersey. She says immigration judges are given very little latitude, especially in cases involving immigrants with criminal records.
The idea of going before an immigration judge seems like a good thing. But in 1996, President Clinton signed an immigration law into effect that made it virtually impossible for immigration judges to actually consider the human being that's before them. So if it's a green card holder with a criminal conviction, for example, and if it's a certain type of criminal conviction and it's a huge list of criminal convictions, the judge can only see that conviction. The judge cannot look at, for example, how long a person's been here, what their family ties are, what their level of rehabilitation is, what they've done in their community. I have a friend who came here at 7 years old and got caught up in bad things when he was, kind of early 20s and spent time in jail for a robbery. And he's now 42, I think, and he was deported to Guyana over last summer. There is not one family member left in Guyana. He had not been to Guyana since he was 7 years old. He grew up in Brooklyn. He grew up in Crown Heights. He was taking care of his blind diabetic mother. He was the sole caretaker of his mother. He's also a surrogate father to his young nephew. He's in Guyana, and he is permanently exiled from the United States. He can never come back. So he couldn't go before the immigration judge and say, I've been rehabilitated. My life is better. Look, I've changed. And it's also, it creates this disincentive for people who do have criminal convictions to, try to get their lives back together, because the ultimate consequence is going to be deportation.
Attorney Amy Gottlieb of the American Friends Service Committee Immigrant Rights Program in Newark, New Jersey. She and the others you heard on this podcast spoke at a recent forum at the New School called The Detention Dilemma: Families, Security, and Immigrant Rights. The forum was co-sponsored by Feet in Two Worlds, along with the New School's Global Studies Program, the Global Migration Group, and the International Center for Migration, Ethnicity, and Citizenship. The producers of this podcast are Sarah Kate Kramer and Jocelyn Gonzalez. I'm John Rudolph. Thanks for listening.
Feet in Two Worlds is supported by the New York Community Trust and the John S. and James L. Knight Foundation,
with additional support from the Mertz Gilmore Foundation and the Cyrus Fund and WNYC, New York Public Radio.
This program was produced in association with the CUNY Graduate School of Journalism and CUNY TV.
Feet in Two Worlds brings the work of immigrant journalists to public radio and the web. We are a project of the Center for New York City Affairs at the New School.
You can support this podcast by going to news.feetintoworlds.org and clicking Help Support FI2W.